This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. 3D printing is a relatively new technology that holds great promise for the future. It's the process of making a three-dimensional solid object of virtually any shape digitally. In traditional manufacturing, material is usually taken away to form an object, but 3D printing reverses that process, creating an object layer by layer. It has applications in the manufacturing of toys, jewelry, automotive parts, and lots more. It's hoped that body parts might be manufactured using the process, and one visionary sees the day when perhaps an entire house could be manufactured that way. Although it sounds like science fiction, it is not only here today. The price has come down so rapidly that you can buy a small 3D printer for about what you can pay for a regular printer, a laser printer, or an inkjet printer. We're going to look into this new world of manufacturing with Brian Federal. He's the owner of Prana Communications and Innovative Glass Design. He's a 3D expert and a documentarian who has produced a feature-length piece on the development of this technology. And he's brought along with him an employee of 3D Systems, Adam Reichenthal, who has already started the process of manufacturing something in the studio during the show on a 3D printer. Welcome to you. Nice to have you with us, Brian.
Great to be here, Mike. Thanks for having us.
Just kind of align yourself up with that microphone a little bit, and we'll be cool. And this piece of, what are we making, by the way? We'll talk about what we're making. What are we making, Adam?
Sure. So we'll be 3D printing a rook.
A rook. Like a chess piece?
Like a chess piece. And the reason we do that, I actually have a finished one here, is it's an ideal version of what you can print on a printer because it has internal structures of both the staircase and a double helix. And that's not something that you can carve away or CNC. It's something that has to be built one layer at a time, so all the way up.
For people who don't know, a rook is the castle in a chess piece. But in this one, you can look down through the top and see a spiral staircase that goes through the tower. And you can look through the front door of it, and you can see the double helix going through. So you can do an inside shape and an outside shape, which we'll talk more about. Now, Brian, how long has this technology been around? I said it's relatively new, but it actually goes back a decent amount of time.
It goes back quite a long time, Mike. The technology, as we know it today, was basically invented by a gentleman named Chuck Hull. And Chuck Hull was, he basically started 3D Systems. And Chuck basically invented a way to take a laser light and then focus it onto a pool of UV-sensitive material. So the laser would trace out a form one thin layer at a time, and in the end, you would end up with a 3D model of that. Now, there were a lot of technical issues with that as far as because you had a material that basically used UV light to set, if it was something you put outside, there's UV light everywhere.
Yeah.
So the materials would keep setting. So it was been a long process to develop those materials. But that's just one way 3D printing is done. There's many technologies. I mean, now you can print pretty much anything. You can print ceramics. You can print titanium. You can print cells, human cells. So I've actually watched this being done, and it's out of the box. I mean,
when I first heard about this, and I think I told you before we started, I first heard about this technology about a year and a half ago at a dinner party, and the guy who was talking about how he'd gone to South Carolina to see this process underway, and he knew that there are two other major 3D manufacturers in the country, and he was going to get on the ground floor of investing because he said, this is it. This is the wave of the future. And as he talked about it, I thought, printing. I just could not get it into my head that you could print a 3D object. Why is it called printing?
Because that's what it is, Mike. It is printing. And, you know, that's the reason that I did this film, actually, is because I talked to – when I started doing this film 3 years ago, and it's been an incredible journey. I have met some of the most interesting people. And it's really interesting when you look at the whole story is art imitating life, life imitating art. Just some of the things, some of the characters that are involved in this whole story are just amazing. It's been one of the most amazing processes I've ever gone through in a project. So
what did the originators of this technology, the people who developed it, the people who came up with it, what did they see this as being able to do? And is this what it's turned out to be? Because sometimes inventors create something that turns out to do and be something other than what they thought it was going to be.
Well, I think initially it was invented to be able to do rapid prototyping. So let's say that I was going to do a new type of microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to physically show you that object and what that looks like. So I would have to go through a process. It was time-consuming. It was expensive. Now with 3D CAD software is increased as far as its power and what you can do with it. So if I wanted to create a new microphone, I could go into a CAD program. First, I could scan it.
And CAD is computer-aided design.
Computer-aided design. And then I could change the design. And I could print it out, come in the next morning to work, and I'd have it and be able to give it to my customer. And so, you know, it's pretty incredible. I mean, actually, it's relatively simple. You're just thinking about one layer at a time of materials going down. But it's hard for our mind to get it. I think when we hear the word printing, because when I first started doing this project, I'd say 1 in 20 people would know what I was talking about. I'd say, yeah, 3D printing. They'd go, oh, you mean like wrapping a car in some plastic? I said, no, I mean, you're actually making a 3D object. And there would be this aha moment.
Yeah.
And as I went out and talked to more people, I realized that there really needed to be a documentary film that documents this process, the history of this process, and walks people through, you know, well, the power that they have in their hands today is just with through computing and
I guess the technology. Way I came to terms with understanding how this worked is it's not unlike the old days of mechanical printing. If you were going to print a poster, you would break it down into its color components and do a pass of red, a pass of blue, a pass of, and then you'd come up with the actual color object. You're laying down layers of whatever the material may be. In the case of this Rook, it's some sort some form of plastic.
Sure, it's Lego-like plastic.
How thin are the layers that you lay down?
That is about 200 microns, or about 1/5 of a millimeter.
How thick is a piece of paper? Is it thicker than a piece of paper?
Slightly thicker than a piece of paper, but not by much. Probably about the thickness of two pieces of paper. And obviously, depending on the technology, there are things that are even thinner than that.
And how as you lay down a layer, is it a quick lay down of each layer? Does the printer have to wait for that layer to dry? Or how does it work technically?
Perfect. So that depends on the technology. So in the case of plastic jet printing, like what we have on the cube there, you know, that'll actually, as soon as you lay it down, it will dry essentially immediately. On the other hand, if we talk about some of our other technologies, in the case of what we do with our true color printers, what it'll do is lay down a layer of gypsum powder and then actually add a binder and a color component, just like what you'd get out of your HP inkjet printer. And it'll actually do true color within the super glue adhesive. So then you're able to get a full color part like that heart that's right there on the table. So it all just depends on what type of technology you're using. We have different tools for different jobs.
And there's a heart on the table. It's the shape of a human heart with all the valves and veins and arteries that come out of it. Inside, if I were to cut this open, would it be true to life or would it just be hollow?
Depends on how you set up the file. So in the same way that on your 2D printer, if I wanted to print out a photo, the printer is only capable of giving what the photo looks like. The printer's not going to improvise on its own. Mm-hmm. So in the same way, if the file is made to have color all the way through, then that's how it'll be printed. And if it isn't, then it'll simply remain hollow.
And in terms of the structural integrity, because you don't just use plastic, you can actually make metal parts of this. So in terms of the structural integrity, as you lay down something, as opposed to taking a block of plastic or a block of marble or a block of metal and carving away at it, you're laying down little individual slices of it and building it up. Is the structural integrity the same?
It's going to be depends on how you print it. There are certain ways that you can lay it down to be stronger versus weaker depending on the actual object. But one of the things we try to do in our software is automate that as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So for me personally, do I understand how material strengths work and how to create infill patterns and support structures? No, I have absolutely no idea how to do any of that stuff. But I can hit the print button. I'm capable of doing that. So fortunately for me, the software will do the legwork and make something that is stronger, that will print correctly, whether I've been doing this for 5 minutes or 5 years.
So in terms of real-world application, this is not unlike any other situation in manufacturing today where robots are making cars. But the real brains behind the robots is in the software. It's in the programming of the code, correct?
It definitely is, and Autodesk is really leading the way there. They've done a lot of work with that. To speak to what Adam was speaking about here, about internal structure, in the beginning of working on this project, I started looking at biomimicry. So it's kind of a movement. It's a group of people. Jean Beignet is leading it. She's a professor. And what she does is she studies nature and looks how nature solves problems. You got a million years or a billion years of R&D there. Mm-hmm. So when we were talking about interior structures, if you look at a piece of bone, like if you were to look, you know, if we were to look at, you know, your hip bone, if you notice, like if you were at Kentucky Fried Chicken, you notice there's like a little spongy pattern inside.
Mm-hmm.
And this is called a trabecular pattern. So that pattern is set up to make that aspect of the bone be strong enough to handle whatever stresses comes on it. There's a gentleman over in the UK, the company's called Within, and what he's done is create an algorithm that will actually figure that out. So you just basically put in information of what stresses that particular shape will take in the job that it does in any kind of machine, and it'll actually print a structure inside it that will actually be strong, extremely strong.
So this is actually better than carving it away out of a piece of metal.
It can be better, especially for airplanes, because you want it to be light. So think about it. You want that piece to have as little mass as possible, but to be strong to do that job. So it's been used in 3D systems as printing for a lot of aircraft.
This looks like a heat sink, but I'm sure it's more than that. What is this?
I believe it's part of a turbine.
Part of a turbine. Okay. It's a piece of... It's metal, and this was done on a printer. And I guess the alternative to this is to put molten metal into a mold and let it dry.
Sure.
Solidify. So is this better than that? Because you can actually talk about the stresses and make it so that it can...
You know, it's certainly different. If you need something to be lighter, if you need something to be more efficient in terms of material use, 3D printing is exceptional for that. Because when you have these hollow structures, it basically allows you to save money on materials for that reason. It's making better use of your overall material.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, we still don't take away from the casting in that world. We make make prints for wax casting. 3D printing is amazing for customization. If I want a one-off, a 10-off, definitely the right tool for that job.
Okay.
If you want to make a million, molds are still cheaper way to do that.
Okay. How did you become interested in that? Because I know you're a designer and you work with glass and you're an artist. How did you become interested in this technology?
Well, Mike, believe it or not, it all started with a house fly.
So
we'll take the story all the way back. No, actually, I was studying biomimicry, so I ordered a lot of different insects to look at color combinations. And when you look at different kinds of insects and the way that they are designed both with shape and with color combinations, it's quite interesting if you apply that to craft. So I'm a glassblower, so I was looking at color, shape, and form, and then taking the information I was getting from an insect, mm-hmm. and there's some incredible insects out there, by the way. She's very compassionate about that. It's like, honey, I have a box of insects here. She said, they're not alive, are they? I said, no. So basically, I was looking at a way to scan it, and so I had basically a small little fly, and I was just looking at it very closely, and this is an incredible design. I mean, a fly is just one of the most incredible design objects out there. When you really start to look at it closely, you start to see some pretty incredible things. So it has a lot of different kinds of hairs and things on it, so it's very small. So I started making all these calls all over the place, all over the world, looking for people that could scan this, mm-hmm. this for me. And as I was doing that, I got interested in 3D printing.
Let me stop you there, because we have to take a break, and maybe we'll pick up on this fly and how 3D printing comes into. Brian Federal is our guest, owner of Prana Communications and Innovative Glass Design. He's produced a documentary on 3D printing. We're going to come right back in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
And you're listening to Charlotte Talks right here on 90.7 WFAE Charlotte. Thanks for tuning in. Support for our programming comes from WFAE members and the Got to Be NC Competition Dining Series, Fire in the City, starting in September. Guests judge 6-course dinners created by competing local chefs. Reservations at competitiondining.com. And Fisher & Phillips LLP, a national labor and employment law firm representing employers in North Carolina from the Charlotte and Columbia offices. Partner Kevin Dalton and Fisher & Phillips on the web at laborlawyers.com. We let you hear a sampling of questions and answers with the Mecklenburg delegation to the General Assembly from our special public forum with the Charlotte Observer and WTVI. That's when Charlotte talks, tomorrow morning at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Obama administration and its allies prepare for a possible military strike on Syria. Debate over justification, objectives, and the risks of unintended consequences.
Join us for the Diane Rehm Show coming up at 10 o'clock here on 90.7 WFAE, listener-supported public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Brian Federal's with us, a documentarian and a glassblower, an artist, a designer, who has become fascinated by and kind of promoting the whole idea of 3D printing, which is a relatively new technology with applications that we really haven't gotten into yet, but we will during the course of this hour, because people say that this is... This is the beginning of a new age, actually. And Adam Reichenthal is also with us with 3D systems. And as anything with a computer, anybody who's ever used a computer will know that one of the key frustrations is that when you want to do something on the computer, you can't because the computer is doing something of its own. And we had started this printer printing, but instead it decided to do a software update. So in a moment, it will start creating this object that we've been talking about. This is not only the dawn of a new technology, Brian, but the beginning of our ability really to turn virtual into 3D reality. We've been able to do this now for years with documents, with paper documents, create a whole color thing that would have taken a mechanical artist a long time to do. We can do it on screen and then say print, and it prints. Now we're talking about doing three dimensions this way. And Chris Anderson, chief editor at Wired Magazine, somebody you quote as saying, "Atoms are the new bits." Really?
Yes, atoms are the new bits. And that really is a story, Mike, is that we're basically able to take the virtual and make it real. So that's something simple to say, but that is a huge leap.
Well, this is like the replicator in Star Trek when you're talking about atoms. If people didn't watch Star Trek, you could go to the Captain, who was the bald-headed dude?
Earl Grey, hot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Captain Picard.
Captain Picard, yes.
Computer, Earl Grey, hot. And it just created a cup of hot Earl Grey tea for him.
We're not there yet.
No, we're not there yet, but this is essentially the beginning of that, isn't it?
It is, and basically it's our... It really is. It's a fascinating story. Chris Anderson is a really good story about him. You know, he was the chief editor at Wired. Mm-hmm. He basically took Wired, what really wasn't being read that much. He took the magazine to one of the top magazines out there, particularly around technology. You know, he does not work for Wired anymore. While he was doing all this, you know, people would bring things to Wired and say, "Hey, here's some stuff we want you to play with. Check out technology." So what he did is he started making these quadricopters. And because chips have gotten a lot cheaper.
What is a quadricopter?
Quadricopters, it has several propellers, and it basically lifts off the ground, and it's like a drone. Mm-hmm. So he does not work for Wired anymore. He has started a company called 3D Robotics, and DIY Drones is another one. And basically people are buying. He just started making these things. He got all these orders. And, you know, it really is a lot about democratization in that, you know, he needed a certain kind of chip. He basically got on the internet. There's a place called Alibaba, which is a world market for anything you want. He said, "Here's the chip I want." A manufacturer in China prints the chip he wants. The chip's mailed. He pays with a credit card. The chip is mailed to his house. His chips are mailed. 2 weeks later, they're at his front door. So he starts making these with his kids on his kitchen table. He has five kids. So, as he was doing this process, he got really busy, and he had questions. So he'd go on the internet with a group in DIY Drones, and he would ask questions. And the same person kept answering him. So as the business kept growing, he says, "God, I need to hire this guy." So he didn't even know who this person was, and he tapped him to be his associate. So he goes, "Yeah, how would you like to start a business with me?" And he hadn't even met the person. Then he finds out it's like a 16-year-old kid from Tijuana with a really crummy little laptop. And this kid just got out of high school. But, you know, that's democratization. That's the new face of manufacturing. So now they have, I think, 70 employees. They have a location in Tijuana. They have one in San Diego, and then the headquarters is in Berkeley. Right. And they're booming.
Well, when I wrote the opening minute, which you didn't hear several days ago for this program, I mentioned that you could buy a 3D printer now for about $1,000. And then yesterday, when I was doing a lot of reading about this, I discovered that that's nothing. You can buy one for $397, which is about the cost of a high-end inkjet printer. And the printer that you brought here to print this 3D object is smaller than my inkjet printer at the office. So what did that cost?
So the cube itself is actually $12.99. It's literally simple enough so that anybody can use it.
It's starting.
It certainly is starting right now, too. So the whole process behind this is, you know, 3D printing is almost 30-year-old technology at this point, but we wanted something that looks good enough to put in your house, simple enough so that your 8-year-old would be able to use it. Someone like myself with the engineering skills of Lego is able to use this seamlessly, and that's the idea.
In the course of making this technology, this documentary on this technology, Brian, you mentioned that you actually saw human tissue being made. What kind of human tissue?
Well, they're doing a lot of different things. They're working with muscle. They're printing that. The company where I was is in San Diego. It's called Organovo. And what they're doing actually is printing tissue. So they actually can take some cells from you. They can print a piece of tissue. And what they can do is run tests on different drugs on that to see how your tissue responds. Ultimately, what they'll be doing is printing organs, and they'll be printing all kinds of parts. Now, when you look at that story in medicine, actually North Carolina is a big player because in Wake Forest University at the medical school, there's a regenerative medical center there. It's run by Dr. Atala.
Okay.
And he, if you look at TED Talks, if you ever watch those, there's one where it says printing the human kidney, which, you know, the viewers can watch that, where it shows him printing it. Now, that's not a human kidney that he's printed. What it is a scaffold. So what they end up doing is printing out like a scaffold, and then they'll use I'm not an engineer,
but
they'll use like a gel, and then they'll drop cells into it.
Right.
Then those cells will start dividing. The cells know what to do. And so they'll start dividing to create that. What's interesting about it, Mike, is that it really comes down to a software issue when you look at biotechnology. Biotechnology is so far beyond, I mean, just doing this process for me, I'm blown away daily with the things that I read about that we're doing. I don't think most of your average citizen realize how far we are along technologically, particularly around this digital to reality piece. But there's a lot of promise for that. 3D printing also in medical is huge in that you could, so think about it. If I needed a new hip, probably one of the issues they have is fitting it to me if they're going to be putting in a new hip, right?
Right.
Well, they can take the MRI is basically a scan. It's a layered scan. They can take that, then print a custom titanium part just for me. And then it's actually printed in such a way. And the body actually does well with titanium. That's one metal that the human body does well with. So there's all these implications for orthopedics.
I should point out that the noise we're hearing, and I'll be quiet for a second so you can hear it better. I guess you can hear that. That's the printer, and it has begun laying out the first couple of layers of this rook that we're, this plastic rook chess piece that we're building. And what happens is there's, just like a regular printer, there's a floor where you would put where the paper would come out. But that floor raises to the print head and then begins to drop as the object grows taller layer by layer, correct?
Exactly. So in the same way that if you had a 2D photo, it would cut up the photo into lines and then print one line of color at a time.
Right.
This does the same thing, except instead of laying one line of the pattern, it will grow vertically into a third dimension.
It's like an old dot matrix printer, isn't it?
Essentially, yes. The technology is it's very much the brother of it. So the difference is instead of getting a photo of a vase, you would get an actual vase or...
This idea of being able to custom make things is really one of the key components of what makes this a valuable technology. Because you, as you said a second ago, you can one off something, which means make one of a kind, and you can do it at much lower cost than it would be if you sat there with a craftsman crafting a hip out of titanium for you. One of the things that I've seen a little segment of your documentary, and one of the segments that I saw was this segment on prosthetics. These are not real body parts, but these are replacement body parts for amputees. And What makes these prosthetics that they're able to create using 3D printing better than, more unique than, the standard prosthetic?
Well, I think if you look at the piece, and it is online, I think you can see it on your site, or on you can see it at www.3dprintingrevolution.com, which is the site for the film. Those particular prosthetics are built by a gentleman, Scott Summon. He works with 3D Systems. And actually, the internal or structural aspect of that is the same as another prosthetic, but what he's doing is making fairings. So if he has a client...
What is a fairing?
A fairing would be like, if you talked about a motorcycle, you know, if a motorcycle has a lot of parts on it, like your fender of your car, you know, you could take the body off the car. The body is somewhat, would be considered the fairing, or it's covering, custom covering the machine. So what he does that I think is really brilliant is he will meet with the individual, talk to them about, you know, their sensibility creatively, what they want their leg to look like, and or you know, and he will produce it in different kinds of titanium and plastics. There'll be different ones they can put on, so it looks and feels, it's not real, but people basically will have a, you know, they feel better about having
it can replicate the shape of the original
calf,
and from what the people in that interview said, it makes them almost feel whole again.
That's right, and that's huge.
Sense of identity and pride.
Yeah, that's a huge thing.
You know, to be more specific, let's say I was a soccer player for years, to be able to have a piece that looks like a shin guard so that I can play soccer more naturally. Or to be able to have something in titanium to match my motorcycle. Or to be able to have something in leather so that it looks like my legs so that I can wear a skirt again.
Yeah.
I would never want to lose my leg, but I've seen some of the prosthetics that come out, and they're pretty incredible looking. Like, having the titanium leg looks amazing. And, you know, there's a lot of things we do at 3D Systems. That's just one of the ones, but it's part of making good. It's one of the opportunities to really change a person's life for the better.
When you were talking about this, that these titanium parts that you can manufacture with 3D technology, these prosthetics look incredible. What came to mind is the fact that the Iron Man suit that Robert Downey Jr. wears in Iron Man is made using 3D printing. Is that right?
It is, and that was a really fascinating story. We were out in Los Angeles, and we basically went to Legacy Effects, which is where they do all that work. They've done all the work. It's a Stan Winston Studios. Stan Winston's passed now, but it's the people who were behind that. So they did Jurassic Park. They did all the Iron Man movies. They also did Avatar, which is very interesting, looking at from a computer graphics point of view. We met with the gentleman that does all that printing. What he'll do is... let's say that now he's got to do an actor for a movie coming up, The Avengers, let's say, for Iron Man. And so they make a suit. They have artists that are basically drawing up the suit, how they want it to be. They make a 3D model of that in the computer. They will send, the gentleman's name is Jason Lopes. They'll send him out on a plane with these scanners. He'll meet the actor at a hotel. He will scan their whole body. He will upload that information to the web, which will go back to Legacy Effects headquarters. The gentlemen there that have the artwork will custom fit that to the forms and the information he's retained from being out in the field. And by the time he gets back, the pieces are already being printed. We were actually in there, and we were looking at all the different parts, and the Iron Man suit would never be possible because it would cost too much money. So we were looking at the iteration, basically creating a new type of hand because Robert Downey Jr. didn't like the way the hand felt in the first film. Uh-huh. So he had to remake another one. That's a very complex thing, and that thing is printed. And so we were looking at it, and Robert Downey Jr. is a lot smaller than me. I mean, we had some of the parts out. My wife was with me, and we took out. He brought out the whole piece from the Avengers that had just come from the set, and we opened it up, and we're taking the stuff out. So it's the whole suit that he had worn, and it has with a Sharpie inside RDJ. So it's Robert Downey Jr. So my wife was really excited about that, and then I tried putting some of it on. No way. I mean, you know, I'm a big dude. But it was really fascinating to watch that process and look at all the work they're doing there. They're doing some amazing work at Legacy Effects.
Now, you can make a rook for a chess game. That's cool, I suppose. You can make an Iron Man suit. I suppose that's cool. These prosthetics are certainly important. And the fact that they are now building scaffolding to and then injecting human tissue into them to replace organs has incredible promise for the future, it would seem to me. But this is going to completely change the nature of manufacturing, it is said. In what, all in every area or just in certain boutique areas?
I don't know if I would say every area, because sometimes you want to make the the same part over and over. So where 3D printing is you have 3D printing to make a specific item, and then you have 3D printing as a manufacturing technology. So I think that we're right at the cusp. Right now, it takes a lot of time. I mean, we're hearing it now, right?
Move your hand for a second.
Yeah.
So it's this thing that's been running now for about 10 minutes, and I can barely see the first layer, but there it's making something.
So that's one of the issues around adoption is the time that it takes. So, and also there's technical issues that'll have to be overcome for it to be manufacturing. But the thing, like you were speaking about earlier, is customization, mass customization. Think about shoes. There's a lot of people working on shoes now. I actually met some folks that have a 3D printing lab at Nike recently, and we're speaking with them.
So they're trying to make shoes. They are making consumer shoes.
Yeah, there's a pair coming out soon. And what's interesting, when you look at a football cleat and the way that it hits the ground, actually the way the cleats are, aren't the most optimum way for you to be able to grip the ground with your feet.
Uh-huh.
So I've even seen where these guys are actually studying the way the foot hits the ground and making custom cleats for people, and they're really like half moon shape, Mike. It's not like just, football cleats used to be just a point.
Right.
These are more of a moon shape. So, Nike's working with that, and they're 3D printing the base of the shoe.
So this allows for low inventory, on-demand manufacture. It allows for prototypes to be made. It allows for individuals to have custom-fitted shoes or other products, prosthetics, body part replacements. That seems like a great big upside to almost everything. There's no downside to that at all. Is there a downside to this technology?
Well, it's certainly a disruptive one. And, to make something a little bit more closer to home than something, let's say, prosthetics. I personally, huge cell phone guy. I've been involved with cell phones for years. To be able to have my own cell phone case, to be able to and have whatever I want printed, something unique to me. I'm a big Transformer buff, so to actually have something like a logo or a favorite character or a name or my kid's name.
Have you done that?
Absolutely. I've also had, 3D printed my belt.
You're wearing a belt that's 3D printed?
Absolutely, and it's not actually put together afterwards. It is one print. So every link in
this here. This is very cool. This is, was it plastic?
No, this is actually sintered nylon. So we've ran over it with a car. It's really strong.
This is not unlike a chain, but it's flat. How would you describe it? You describe it. It's your belt.
It's more like a bike chain belt. One of our incredible designers out in the Netherlands, Jana Kitanen, designed it. Great guy, very eccentric individual.
Yeah.
But wanted to do something in 3D printing that's high fashion and created a whole line of high fashion items that were all 3D printed.
And I got to tell you, maybe we can take a picture of it and put it on our website. But
absolutely.
It's very cool. We have to take a break. We'll come back in a moment with more on 3D printing. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
And thanks for keeping it tuned. This is a rebroadcast of Charlotte Talk Show. We're not taking your phone calls. And this is 90.7 WFAE, listener-supported public radio. Where support this morning comes from WFAE members and Community School of the Arts, teaching art and music at more than a dozen studios across Charlotte, now registering for fall group classes and private lessons. Details online at csarts.org. And Mr. Rogers Windows, a local family business since 1986, offering renewal by Anderson replacement windows and entry door systems installed by trained craftsmen. Product details at mrrogerswindows.com. Coming up at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the Obama administration and its allies prepare for a possible military strike on Syria. Debate over justification, objectives, and the risks of unintended consequences. That's on the Diane Rehm Show, coming up at 11 o'clock.
Hi, I'm John Hockenberry, host of The Takeaway. We're a fast-paced look at the news of the day where you'll hear in-the-moment conversations that take the facts and frame them in ways that make you think. We've got great guests, experts, people affected by the news, all part of the conversation, all part of your conversation, too, we hope. The Takeaway, Monday through Thursday at 2 here on WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. The noise you hear in the background is a 3D printer. We're not exactly sure what it's printing. It's printing something. Our guest today is Brian Federal, owner of Prana Communications and Innovative Glass Design, and he's a documentarian who has produced a documentary on this new technology, relatively new technology. Adam Reichenthal is also with us from 3D Systems, which is a local company which does this. I'm holding in my hand a woman's platform shoe. Are these for sale, or is this just a prototype?
No, they're absolutely for sale. You can get them at cubify.com. And one more amazing design from Yana that we were talking about earlier.
This really is, once again, very cool. I don't know how anybody would walk in this or how comfortable this is, but it's very, very cool. Maybe we'll put a photograph of this on our website. We already have photographs of several things, and we just are adding Adam's belt to the website now, so you can see the 3D printed belt, which is actually one piece. It's not made of parts. It was printed in its entirety, which is one of the interesting things about this technology. We also have a lot of people who want to chime in here, so let me bring in some people. Ashley emails, I personally have not used the 3D printer, but I have seen examples of the work it's done. Students at the College of Textiles at NC State have used the machine to sample ideas for things such as shoe designs, to just using it for fun and making small objects. From what I've seen, it looks very amazing, and it is a technology that I think will continue to grow. Well, I think that's an understatement, Ashley. Let me go to David in Charlotte. David, welcome. You're on WFAE.
Hi, Mike. Hi, guys. Really excited to hear you guys on here today. Next month, my daughter will be taking a camp at Central Piedmont where she will build a 3D printer and bring it home with her. So
she will build a printer?
She will build the 3D printer. This is, I believe, the second year that Central Piedmont has offered this camp. And it's really exciting. It's an amazing technology, and the fact that so many people are doing it, on their kitchen tables at home, it's really incredible.
What kind of things are people doing on there? Because you can buy one now for $397. So, if I bought one, what would I do with it?
Well, Mike, there's all kinds of things you could do with it. There are people printing all kinds of little, plastic things. There are, just a wide variety of things you can do with it.
That brings up a quote from the guy who used to run IBM 100 years ago who didn't understand that. He said that what? Give me the quote. This is a famous quote about only five people in the world need...
Thomas Watson. He's the chairman of IBM in 1943.
Right.
And his famous quote was, I think there's a world market for maybe five computers.
And now everybody has two or three computing devices in their house. So this is
one that's
happen.
Even better. It's from Western Union memo from 1876. This telephone, quotation marks, has too many shortcomings to be seriously considered as a means of communication. The device is inherently of no value to us.
So is this the beginning? We're in the infant stages of it. We're at this technology where the telephone was when he made that quote.
Very much so.
So is this something that is the beginning of having replicators in the house? I mean, microwaves used to be unusual, and now every home has a microwave oven. Is this the beginnings of something that we will, in 25 years, all have?
I believe so, Mike. One of the things that's very interesting in it is, If you look at material science is growing at an exponential rate as far as how we understand to print things. They're printing things on a molecular level. They are doing nano printing. And so when you look at that, there's a whole nother phase of this. I just saw last week they printed a battery that's the size. I'm not a scientist
battery.
Or an engineer, but this thing is very small. So they're talking about actually having where you would have very small little nano robots that might attach to one of your, one of your blood cells and do something specific.
So, David,
which is kind of wild to think about.
Yeah. David, what does your daughter intend to do with this printer once she's built it?
Well, so we do robotics stuff. She's on a high school robotics team, and we will use it to prototype parts for robots. They're also, somebody mentioned Legos. Both my kids are complete Lego freaks. and we will probably use it to make our own custom.
Now we get to another issue that we want to talk about. Thank you for your call, Dave, but we get to another issue. You're welcome. And that is intellectual property. This is going to do to, I guess, the manufacturing business or the shoe business, because I could, if I had a scanner, I could scan a pair of shoes that I like and keep making them myself on my 3D printer, I suppose. But I didn't design them. I don't own the design. What about the property rights issue of this?
Very good question, and there's definitely two answers for that. You know, first and foremost, 3D Systems has been around for almost 30 years. We have a tremendous amount of intellectual property. We respect intellectual property.
Yeah, but you are at the professional level. Well, when this thing becomes democratized and every house has a replicator, essentially.
So that's a great point. So what I was going to say is, to the companies that already have IP, to the users that are creating incredible designs, at least on Cubify, we absolutely take that very seriously. And it's the thing where we want to make sure that you have an opportunity to monetize it, and we protect it. We make individual deals with you specifically.
And,
now,
and Cubify is?
Cubify, it, or Cubify.com is 3D Systems' consumer-facing brand.
Okay, all right.
It's been around for almost three years at this point.
But you're young. Won't some young whippersnapper come up with the Napster version of Cubify?
It already exists.
Okay, there you go.
Here's the difference. You know, ultimately, while people will have an opportunity to take something and download something for free, which is perfectly acceptable, it also brings up a tremendous amount of legal issues, and at least from the concept, or at least from the position of 3D Systems, we want to make sure that people have an opportunity
now,
to protect their
years
own
ago,
content.
The music industry fought MP3 technology, and they wanted, and they even fought the ability to copy a CD that you used to go to record stores, if you recall that, record stores, to buy. But now they've embraced that technology because they have no choice. But still, these bits are floating through the internet, and people are downloading music for free, and it's reshaped the entire music industry. It's reshaping the movie industry. It's reshaping the television industry. Is this going to reshape everything?
The answer is probably. And a lot of things that what you've seen in the music industry are definitely things that are going to echo in 3D printing, and we're going to see how that works out. So in the same way that I could download a song right now, even if I pay for it, remix it, add my own personal blend, and in some cases make it better, The same thing is going to happen from the IP side. So I could take a design, modify it to myself, and that's where the questions get interesting. So what happens when I take an amazing idea and make it even better? And I think that that's where a lot of interesting questions are going to come up moving forward.
But why is I don't have any legal experts at the table, I don't think. But how is that different from my looking at a light bulb and saying I can do this better? There are laws that govern my ability to do that in the physical, old-fashioned, mechanical way of manufacturing world. Are there do those laws work in your world?
You know, I'm going to say that I'm not a legal expert, so I can't inherently comment on that. I would certainly love to find out the answer for you, though.
Okay. Let me take another phone call. This is from Terrence, who chairs the engineering department, evidently, at CPCC. Terrence, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate that, and I'm very excited to hear about more about what your guests have to say about 3D printing. Just wanted to aspect of, since I am in the academia world, it is actually changing the face of academia. And from a manufacturing standpoint, I know that in college we actually went to UNCC, and we had our own 3D printer. But I wanted to comment also that David's call, his actually daughter is taking our class.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually created the class on how to build your own 3D printer.
Okay.
And we just ran the last week's class, so I wanted to talk to you more about education standpoint of it.
Well, go ahead. This is your opportunity.
Absolutely. What it does is we have a class where they come in for 5 days, and the students, in building their own 3D printer, it's really exciting that they can go home with a 3D printer, but they actually learn educational and engineering aspects of the 3D printer along the way. So it's not just a skills camp and how to build it. It's they learn about the computer aspects of it, the electronics behind it. the thermodynamics and things like that. The list goes on and on when you talk about a complex project.
Yeah, because you don't think about the heat aspects of this. What's being put down on the printer that's printing right now is, I guess, molten plastic. You use metal, et cetera, and it has to solidify almost instantly, right?
Exactly. So he's actually teaching that gentleman's daughter skills that I personally don't have, which is incredible. So do I know the temperature or the melting temperature of ABS plastic? No, I have no idea. Do I know the structural integrities? No, I don't. Now, in the same sense that it's incredible for guys like me to not know that and still be able to print and do incredible things, the fact that this education exists for people to understand it and the difference between someone that uses a computer and someone that programs, it's literally the same concept.
Right.
And to the power users, it's very strong that they have an opportunity to get this education too.
Terrence, thank you for your call, and take Adam into your class. He'll know the thermodynamic properties of plastic and metal. Grant is on his way to work in Huntersville and has a question. It's an interesting one. Grant, welcome.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I wanted to ask all of you a question. I was wondering if you guys were aware of this group of individuals in Austin, Texas. They are 3D printing guns, assault rifles, and it's just really, really interesting and alarming, and I really don't know what to think about it. What do you guys think about that?
Well, it is interesting, and it pushes a lot of the ideas of IP. The gentleman's name is Cody Wilson. I actually spoke with him this week.
Is he the guy on YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I saw his
yeah.
video yesterday, because he's printing essentially the key component of the rifle that was used at Sandy Hook Elementary.
Oh, really?
That's what he's printing. He's not printing the whole gun, because without that piece, you can buy that gun anywhere, because it doesn't work, but you can print the piece that makes it an alarming weapon.
Right.
And he's doing that, and he's making the source code for that design available on the Internet, because he feels that it's important for people to have access to that around the world. Now, to me, that's kind of warped.
Well, Mike, you know, it's hard to legislate sanity. I mean, if it leads, it bleeds. I think it's somewhat unfortunate that, I mean, if it bleeds, it leads. That this has become a big topic, although I do respect what's going on with it and some of the other people in the industry. I've had a lot of conversations with people about this,
mm-hmm.
Just trying to look and get a handle on it. We're going to have to deal with the IP issue. If you want to make a gun, you can make a gun. I mean, there are so many tools available. If you want to get a metal milling machine and go to it, could.
But isn't this easier? I mean, if the source code is available and you pay $400 for a printer,
well, there's a lot of technology behind it. So it's a big story. There's a lot going on behind the surface. In talking with the gentleman, there was a film made where one of them exploded. And, you know, when it was shot, but it was also using a different kind of round, and, it gets kind of technical the way that it's put together.
Okay.
So, but it does push the idea of IP, because we're going to have to deal with that.
You know, Mike, you bring up the exact heart of the matter. Anyone can download it, anyone can print it. And that's really what this issue is all about. And, you know, and you're also right in the fact that it is an IP issue. And at least from the 3D systems perspective, we're definitely working with our legal team to both prevent the IP issue, as well as trying to figure out what we can do to prevent this kind of circulation on our end, just out of simple responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
While obviously we have our own defense contracts and whatnot, which are perfectly acceptable, at the consumer level, this isn't something that we want to promote. And any way that we have an opportunity to keep these things safer and away from that, we're absolutely committed to doing so.
In his State of the Union address, President Obama talked about bringing manufacturing back to the United States, and he included this whole idea of 3D printing in that statement. Here's what he said.
Our first priority is making America a magnet for new jobs in manufacturing. After shedding jobs for more than 10 years, our manufacturers have added about 500,000 jobs over the past three. Caterpillar is bringing jobs back from Japan. Ford is bringing jobs back from Mexico. And this year, Apple will start making Macs in America again. There are things we can do right now to accelerate this trend. Last year, we created our first Manufacturing Innovation Institute in Youngstown, Ohio. A once-shuttered warehouse is now a state-of-the-art lab where new workers are mastering the 3D printing that has the potential to revolutionize the way we make almost everything. There's no reason this can't happen in other towns.
What are they doing in Youngstown?
In Youngstown, they've created something called NAMI. It's the National Additive Manufacturing Innovation Institute. And what it is it's a private and public organization that brings all kinds of 3D printing equipment into one space. This would be also, schools, colleges, engineering groups come together, and they work together to solve problems to bring 3D printing into the future. I mean, one of the issues is when we talked about 3D printing, a lot of times it takes a long time to print something.
Yes.
So looking at it as a manufacturing tool is different than looking at it as a prototype tool. So there's a valley that has to be moved through. And there's technical issues as well of making a final piece that you can put on a plane or you can put in an engineered machine.
For about 40 minutes, we've been listening to the sound of something being manufactured, and so far it's almost imperceptible what's being laid down here from across the room. Very quickly, Robert on Facebook says, on the subject of 3D printing, you may not be aware that it's a boon to the preservation and reconstruction of historical artifacts. Just this week, I've been working on a part for a 1925 radio, the Ultradyne L3. The bad thing about this part is that it requires a high-resolution printer. Brian Federal, our guest today, is the owner of Prana Communications and Innovative Glass Design. He's a documentarian who has produced a documentary on this relatively new technology. And Adam Reichenthal is from 3D Systems, a local 3D printing company. Thanks for the hour.
I'm Mike Collins.